let's get started with the Video Film Podcast. It's me, Jesse, and as usual, I'm here with, dare I say, my friend Adam.
Yeah, you dare. Why wouldn't you dare to say that?
Yeah, some people are like, I'm not your friend.
Wow.
I've never had anyone say that to me, but I could imagine that would be the worst thing you could ever hear. Is you going, hey, buddy, I'm not your fucking buddy.
Yeah.
That'd be the worst thing.
Okay. So we're talking about movies today.
Talking movies. We're talking The Claim from maybe 2001. Let me look this up. From 2000, The Claim.
Mm-hmm.
And all you need to know about The Claim is Sarah Polley's in it.
Okay.
That's it. Nothing else matters. Mila Jovovich is in it. Wes Bentley's in it. But it has Sarah Polley. That's all you need to know.
Okay.
And Rounders with Matt Damon and Edward Norton. That came out in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Real guessing around here. That was directed by John Dahl. And The Claim was directed by Michael Winterbottom.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know or do you remember which other film we have done on this very podcast directed by Michael Winterbottom?
No.
That movie was Tristram Shandy.
Oh, yeah. I did see that.
He's a frequent Steve Coogan collaborator.
Yeah, he did all the trips.
All the trips. 24-hour Party People, Greedy. Have you seen that movie?
No.
It's not one of his best.
Okay.
Lots of movies with him and this movie.
And was this one of his best?
Was this one of his best? I don't know. This movie's tough.
What'd you think of it?
I liked it. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. A lot of it was because you understand, I guess, what happened before the events of the movie, which is, if I'm correct, the founder of the town bought his wife and child from another guy.
No.
No. Okay.
Sold.
So what happened? So wait a second. He sold his wife and child to that guy?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, now the movie makes way more sense, right?
Makes sense. I thought he was the guy who was buying them.
No, because he doesn't know his daughter until she arrives in town long after he's founded it.
Well, that's what confused me, because I was like, I thought yeah. he bought them, and then he was like, and then he was so ashamed that he bought them that
no. He's really ashamed that he sold them. So this is the first time you've seen this movie.
Okay. It is, yes.
Yeah.
It is definitely the first time I've seen the movie. So now it all makes sense. Now I love the movie.
Yeah. Well, that makes it makes a lot more sense.
Before I liked it.
now
it's so much more complicated, because I wondered, like, the woman that he marries is like, we're already married, but she doesn't seem at all mad at him for selling her and her infant daughter to somebody.
Well, she's got an angle. When she comes back to town, she knows she's dying, so she wants him, and her husband's already dead, the husband that bought her. He's dead, and so she knows that the only hope for Sarah Polley is to get the original, her actual father, to step up and claim her as his daughter and then support her. So she's got an angle when she comes to town. That's why there's talk at the beginning saying, like, you know what to do. Don't say she's coaching Sarah Polley. Mm-hmm. When you go to see him, just hand him this necklace. Don't say anything else. Yeah. And now when you get invited over for tea, just say this and just say that. Don't act too anxious. Don't do this. And she's coaching her.
Yeah.
She's coaching Sarah Polley, because she's trying to get Sarah Pauly's dad to support her for the rest of her life.
Why would she need support? Like, I can see why she might need short-term support, but she seems like, how do you say, a catch? She seems like she could be either an independent woman because she seems to be a smart, capable woman, or she could marry a guy and they could support each other.
I think because there's no such thing as an independent woman in the 1800s. So
maybe you're forgetting Mila Jovovich, who starts her own town.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's true.
Also owns a whorehouse.
Right.
Which,
yeah, it seems like there's not a lot of job opportunities for women.
No, but the ones that there are lucrative, mm-hmm. I guess. But yeah, I guess you're right. She would need some kind of support until she got married, for the most part, probably. But she doesn't seem to be, yeah, like, I guess a lot of it confused me because I interpreted it wrong. I don't know how I missed that scene. I could have sworn that guy who's the founder of the town was buying them, not selling them. So the other guy found gold?
Yes.
And
no. Uh-huh. Yes. The other guy found the claim.
Yeah.
Found the gold.
Yeah.
And then what's the actor's name that's the founder? He's a famous guy.
He's pretty famous, but it's funny. I haven't seen him in that many things.
Okay, you don't know his name.
I mean, can
find
it, but
you should be ashamed of yourself that you don't know his name off the top of your head.
I'm ashamed of myself for other things.
That big one. Big time shame.
Peter Mullen.
Well, you had to look that up, so really.
I did have to look it up. That's I'm still ashamed.
Pretty sad.
I'm no less ashamed.
Peter Mullen.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up with his wife and daughter.
Yep.
And then the other guy says, I found this gold, and he says something like, I don't need the gold. I need a family. And yeah. Peter Mullen's like, you can have that one. He's like, I need a wife. He's like, you can have that one. And yeah. I think after that, he says, what about the kid or something? He's like, take the kid too. Like, it's pretty harsh. He sells them pretty. And the woman, you know, fights for a second and says, I'm not for sale. And then the guys are like, this deal's happening, honey.
This doesn't concern you.
Men are talking. And then, she goes along with it. Now, yeah, you're right. She doesn't show enough anger to make it really obvious of what took place in that transaction. I agree with you because I was confused as well about who sold who to who. And then I had to just use logic and be like, well, clearly the guy that doesn't have the wife and daughter that founded the town because he has $1 billion in gold was the guy that received the gold and gave up the wife and child. And so,
yeah, it makes way more sense. But and I was so confused of how they left him, because there's also that scene where the guy who buys them wakes up in the morning, nobody's around. And he goes out and he starts yelling for his wife and daughter.
Yeah, there was a scene where somebody's yelling.
It was that guy. Because he woke up, it was like the next morning, and they're gone, and everybody's gone, and he's yelling for them.
Well, that was the guy that founded the town. That was Peter Mullen.
No. No, it was the other guy who was yelling.
If he's yelling, I think you're confused again. It would make no sense. I'm just using logic, not even remembering the characters.
I know.
It can't be the guy that sold them, because it can't be the guy that bought them.
Yeah.
Because.
But it definitely was him.
I don't think so.
One of the things where I was like, okay, so he did sell them and now he's having seller's remorse.
Why would it be in Peter Mullen? It's a memory from Peter Mullen, right?
It's,
so why would it be?
I guess. Unless I'm.
Why would he have memories of a different guy?
Yeah, unless I'm confusing the two characters.
You're definitely confusing the two characters.
Unless I couldn't tell which... No, but I mean, like, unless one of them looked more like Peter Mullen... And then the
that could be it. Honestly, it could be as simple as one guy has a beard. Peter Mullen has a beard in the future. And when they flash back, one of them has a beard and the other one doesn't. So you're like,
okay,
oh, well,
so who has a beard then?
I don't know. I'm just saying that could have been why we're both confused about who was who.
That's why I'm confused about this movie.
Yeah, I didn't. I watched whatever, about 40 minutes of it. And then I stopped. And then. When I was watching actually a bad quality copy of it in 4:3 aspect ratio, and the color was shitty, and I was like, oh, this is awful. And then when I got a better copy of it, and I started watching the better copy from the beginning, and I'm like, holy shit, this is way better. The color's better. It's in the full widescreen. And I was like, I can't believe I wasted 40 minutes watching this in such shitty TV grade quality. Like, it must have been a VHS copy or whatever. So I watched the entire first 40 minutes again. And I was like, oh, now it's a lot easier to follow. I've done that a few times with movies where I watch them and then I'm like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And then I watch it and I start watching it at the beginning. I'm like, oh, now I get why that character's doing that. And so that helped me a lot to understand who was who and what was going on and which characters were which. And so that might be why it was easier for me. If I had just sat through it that first time.
Like if you have better picture quality too. You can follow along better because you're not like, oh, this looks like shit, and you're missing parts of it because you're like, I wish I could have seen more of this.
Yeah, I definitely could have been some people being cut off outside of the frame that was distracting for me. Like, who is he talking to? Whatever. I was definitely, it makes me understand why if you were a filmmaker and somebody ported your movie to a VHS television landscape 4:3, you'd be so angry. You're ruining the thing that I just went out and we spent $100 million creating, and then you're gonna ruin it and give it to most of the people that want to see it at home. Be very upsetting to me as a filmmaker.
And when it isn't, or when it was in widescreen in the 90s, people would be like, what the fuck is this? It's fucking cut off. I can't tell what the fuck's going on my 15 inch TV. I can only get half the screen, and so they must have just been like, just go to the fucking movies. Just go to the movies. That was probably one of the best things that ever happened to filmmakers was the widescreen TV.
And bigger too. When television became big enough that if you got a 40 inch TV, it didn't take up half your living room. It could now just be a picture frame on the wall.
And then it kicked them in the ass when people stopped going to see movies. And now they only see them on their TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a catch 22.
Okay, really. So now that you understand the movie. So the movie is about Sarah Pauly and her mother go to town. They've got a plan. Mm-hmm. They're going to go and get the father, Sarah Pauly's father, to reconnect and take ownership and look after the daughter after the mother dies. And there's another man there who's from the railroad, and Peter Mullen, the founder of Kingdom. What is it called?
Kingdom Come.
Peter Mullen, the founder that got the gold claim that built the town. He wants the railroad to come through the town because he knows that's going to be success for the town forever or for a while. And so he starts by trying to maybe bribe the guy a little bit, tries to treat him well. And then Wes Bentley, is that the guy's name?
Wes Bentley, yep.
He is from the railroad man.
Yep.
And he says he's going to do what's right. And he starts surveying around and he's like, this is too difficult to bring the railroad to this town.
It's up on a hill. It's not a great place to put a railroad, but go ahead.
And so he decides he's not going to do it. He's not going to bring the railroad there. He's going to go the easier route into the valley or something. So pretty late in the movie, he says, I'm leaving town. or I'm out of here and the railroad's not coming through here. And then he offers to Mila Jovovich to come down to the valley and start a new town, wherever the railroad's going to be.
Yeah.
And she says, okay, because she was a partner of the founder, Peter Mullen, who gives up, dumps her to remarry his original wife, Sarah Pauley's mother, and take Sarah Pauley as his daughter.
Yes.
As long as Sarah Pauley doesn't find out that he sold her when he was young, which would have been very confusing if you were you trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. But
very confusing.
And so, yeah, it's a I like a lot of the movie. I could see not liking it. I could see watching it and disliking the movie completely. But I liked a lot of go ahead.
No, I'm just saying you could dislike it because it's slow.
Slow.
It's in the wilderness.
A little hard There's to follow no at some points.
Yeah. But for me it was, apparently, even though I still liked it. But yeah, I keep going.
With
how you like the movie.
Some of the stuff that made me really enjoy it was just how they're living in this landscape. So apart from following the plot and figuring out who's who and why is she coming to town and why is this character getting dumped and why is there a hooker that's in love with one of the partners of the railroad? What's that going on there? Apart from all that stuff, I just found it interesting to watch some of the things they paid attention to that were like, oh, can you imagine living in this horrible time and place? It's awful. Yeah. There's no internet. Oh man. No, but
you can slide your house along the ground.
Well, that's one of the things. Like, that's just incredible that all of a sudden in one scene they're showing that there's a giant fucking house being towed up a hill by a million horses.
Yeah.
And you're like, and people and horses just trying to pull a giant house. And you just like, it made me stop and be like, holy, can you imagine moving a house?
Yeah.
It's almost incredible to believe today that we can put them on trucks and move a house. But to imagine trying to do it in the 1800s with horses and people, if you had all the money in the world, which the guy did, he had all the gold that you could ever hope for. You could do stuff like that. You could hire 1,000 people and basically build a town just based on the money that you had. It's crazy. And then to just them moving a house, some of the other things, like he's got all the money in the world, so he moves a house to town.
Yeah.
Pulls it up.
He rides a house. Yeah. He rides pulls up a house, in a house.
Pulls up, says to his wife, here's your house. Great.
Yeah.
And they don't draw enough attention to it in the movie for, if you're confused about what's going on, you'd be like, who's the house for? Why is this woman getting a house? But then he also has enough money that he can bring in any doctor in the world to try to treat her because she's going to die. So he brings in this guy who's like, look it, I have this thing, this magical thing that puts electricity through the body, and he plugs it into a frog and he's like, look, see how the frog is jumping as I put electricity through it? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, that's your essence. That's the essence. When you're sick, your essence is leaving your body. When we inject this magical thing into it, this current into it, your essence is being recaptured. Just, and they're like, well, I guess so. They don't know. So the part of our treatment,
it works on the frog.
Part of her treatment is just to hold on to two rods and have them crank electricity through her body, because they were like, your guess is as good as mine. I liked it. Such a small part of the movie. They don't draw any attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Or another part where they're trying to get nitroglycerin across a stream. And they're like, this is how we did it. We had horses with a rickety cart and we dragged the explosives across the stones in the creek. Boom, it blows up. People die. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, that makes sense. There's other stuff. There's something else. Oh, just a shot of them building the railroad. It's a small part, but yeah. they cut to enough scenes of them building the railroad. You're like, yeah, that railroad, you had to build it 1 inch at a time.
Yeah.
And yeah, they show them laying down a thing, driving the railroad ties in there, whatever they're called, and building it. And you're like, yeah, that makes sense. It's that much work. I think they even throw out the number of how much per mile it's costing them to build that railroad.
It was like a ridiculous amount, like $1 million or something. What it was.
It could have been something. I don't know. But they, but then you go, yeah, that makes sense that because of how much it cost. What it would do is it could build or destroy a town. It could sustain or destroy an entire town.
Yeah.
Just because you can get a vehicle in and out of there. Because if you didn't have a vehicle, there was no cars to drive. You weren't building roads. So this was the road and the one vehicle you control all transportation to and from that town. Like it was a good, there was enough of that that I was like, this is pretty fascinating to think about this time and place. And they showed me enough of that because they didn't have to, they didn't have to stop and show them building the railroad, but they did that. And it made me stop and be like, yeah, this is amazing. Go ahead.
You also realize that they build the railroad, the town of Lisboa or whatever springs up, built on Mila Jovovich's money, but and they make it sort of like a big deal, but I've never heard of this town. It's obviously not a major city right now, and you realize like the railroad mattered for a while and it was the biggest thing ever, and then they had cars and they built highways and then it didn't matter at all,
right?
And now towns that were built along railroads, nobody gives a shit about. They all died.
Right.
Because the highway wasn't built there.
Yep.
And it just keeps going. And then what's the next thing going to be, right? Like, we still have cars, but then when we move on to something else, or now there's planes. Now you can go to Aruba, where you would not never even thought of going before. And that's a huge destination because there's planes. Like, it's just interesting how... You must have thought back then, oh, this is going to be in forever.
Yep.
People are going to live here forever in this town. First the whorehouse and then everything else. And then it's going to be great. And the people are going to be talking about this in 2026. Lisboa is going to be the capital of California, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. It's in a fucking mountain covered in snow. And the railroad went by there for 50 years. And now... I'm sure it may exist. I don't know. I don't even know if this town exists anymore in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
How are you so sure that it was a real town?
Well, I don't know. I'm guessing it was a real town.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it's not, but either way, at the other town, what's it called? Why, how do we keep forgetting this town?
Kingdom Come.
He just burned it down. Like, the town is just gone.
Yeah.
Like, he built this huge town, and then he was like, I'd rather have my wife and daughter who have left me. And he just burns the whole thing down and kills himself, and nobody knows about it now. It's just nothing now.
Yeah.
Even 5 years later, probably nobody even remembers that town.
And they sum it up. He sums that up at the end. Wes Bentley, he says, these guys were like kings as they're dragging his corpse through the burned town. These guys were like kings. And I think Sarah Pauly's like, explain. And he's like, they came from nothing. They built this town up and they ruled them like kings. And then they can destroy their, I don't know if he says anything else, but it does make you stop and think and be like, yeah, it is fascinating to think about.
Yeah.
And I think there's another speech where he says something like, in 100 years, you'll be able to say you were part of building this town, founding it. You were here on the day that it got, there was nothing here. I think it did a great job of making you think about that kind of stuff, because I stopped to think and be like, yeah, I look around and see all these houses. And at one point it was just nothing. There was nothing here. There was not one building. Somebody had to say like, I'm going to build the first building here.
Yeah.
or what are we talking about? 10 people said, we're going to build the first two buildings here. Like, it's crazy to think about that kind of pioneering.
And there's towns that have been just completely abandoned, like not even that long ago, that people have just, something happened and they just left all, the whole town.
Yes.
And there's, like, you see these, the old West towns and stuff that would have, probably because of the railroad or whatever, they're just completely gone, ghost towns.
Correct.
Like, it's an incredible thing. I really like this movie. And like you, I didn't see it in the best, I think I saw it in the best quality possible because it was a DVD, but I'd like this film to be released in like 4K.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you see movies in 4K and you're like, wow, that's an, or Blu-ray, it's an incredible jump from something like DVD, and it makes the movie even better.
I think this is one you definitely probably like more on your second viewing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, I'll tell you, it's some of the stuff that they're showing you, because they didn't spend a crazy amount of time or money on this movie,
mm-hmm.
it was done probably not as well as they should have done it. Just the simplest example for me is at the end, they find Peter Mullen in the snow.
Yep.
And you walk up to him and Sarah Pauly's like, oh no, I hope he's still alive. And I'm sitting there going, is he still alive? Like, I can't tell. Like, he's full of color. He doesn't look like a corpse.
No.
So I'm like, is he alive? And then they kind of roll him over and they're like, oh, it's a shame. And I'm like, is he alive or not? Like, they haven't, they need to tell me explicitly if he's alive or not. And then a few minutes later, they're dragging him through the town. I think Mila Jovovich, she runs up to him and she's like, oh no, it's horrible. He's there. And then I'm like, mm-hmm. I can see him breathing. You can see his chest going up and down. I'm like, so is he dead or not? I just needed a little bit of fucking makeup to make him look like a corpse for me to go, oh, he's clearly dead. He went out and died. Even when they were dragging him up the thing, I'm like, well, I guess you're supposed to assume that he's dead, but he's full of color. I can see him breathing.
Or was it one of those things where they were like, he's gonna die. Like, he's got the hypothermia. We should just let nature take its course. Forget wrapping him in a blanket and putting him by the fire.
I'm pretty sure you're supposed to know that he's dead as a viewer, as an audience member. Yeah. I'm pretty sure
that's
you're supposed
to. Yeah.
And I didn't, because I was confused because I could see him breathing and he looked like Peter Mullen lying still, as still as he could. And that's exactly what it was, just because they didn't, I don't know, hire a makeup person to do a little bit extra on him.
And now they use like CG.
I'm sure they could.
When people are supposed to be dead and they're lying on a table, they have to make it look like their chest isn't rising and falling. So at
that
time,
makes sense.
It was just hold your breath.
Hold your breath. And like, he didn't at some scenes. I'm watching him there and I'm like, I can see his chest moving. Is he supposed to be dead or is he supposed to be alive? And then based on just the reaction of the character being like, oh, it's so horrible. You're like, oh, I guess she thinks he's dead. But he's not. Someone give him mouth to mouth. Anyways, that is what. Okay. So because there was so little dialogue to explain exactly what was happening in some of the scenes, I think it kind of confused us. Clearly it confused you.
Yes, clearly.
If he had said, my name's Peter Mullen, nice to meet you, whatever the character's name was, if they had have maybe said the character's name two or three times, you would have been like, oh, well, I know which guy that is. But they gave you too much credit.
Or if he said, like, I don't have a beard now, but I'm thinking of growing one in the future.
That would have been good.
My name is Pete. I would have been like, yeah, he doesn't have a beard. Okay, now I could tell him apart. I assumed he always had a beard.
Mm-hmm.
That was my downfall watching this movie, was that I guess I assumed his permanent look was beard.
Yeah, and there's a fine line between really dumbing it down for the audience, because you're like, well, these morons aren't going to get what's going on, and leaving it up for them to understand, like, obviously we're all on the same page here. You should know what's going on between these two characters. Yeah. So that's why I'm saying it'd be better on a second viewing. It was better for me on a second viewing.
I'm going to have to watch it again for sure. And I very much enjoyed it, but now that you explained it to me, it's even better. Plus it's got Sarah Pauly, so you can't really go wrong. And it was obviously made it with a lot of Canadian people, probably in Canada, which I always feel like a little bit proud, I guess, when I see a lot of Canadian actors in a movie that looks like it was filmed in Canada. Well, I'm sure it was filmed in Canada. But why? I always feel like, I don't know.
That's weird.
I don't know. Just because you see like, oh, those are Canadian people. That's cool.
Yeah, I don't know where the pride part comes in, though. I know those like people, Olympics, they're Canadian.
It's like the Olympics. You're cheering for them.
Really?
Like, good job. Did you watch any Olympics?
No. What Olympics?
The Olympics that are on right now.
Really? No.
I've watched 15 minutes of the ladies, I think it's called Big Air Snowboarding, where they do snowboard tricks.
Okay.
It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The tricks that they do. That's the only thing I've watched.
Okay. I'll tell you something else about the claim that confuses me in these old-timey movies is when they talk about money. And I hear the numbers, and then I'm like, what are they talking about? There's one point where the hooker, the side plot with that one railroad guy, that the hooker falls in love with him.
Yep.
And she's in the room, and the madam comes by and says, it's another $30 for an hour. Mm-hmm. And I went, okay, that's a number, a $30 for an hour. Then later on, Sarah Pauly's mother, she says to Peter Mullen, I want $200 a year to live on. That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit. Does that mean the hooker costs, like, basically in today's standards, like $15,000 or something for a half an hour or an hour with the hooker? Like, I was like, that's how much she needs $200 a year to live on. Yeah. And they were asking for $30 for an hour with a hooker.
Yeah.
It just seems like the numbers don't make sense.
It's kind of like when you go to the movies or you go to like a sporting event or a concert. Like you're there. They got you there.
Mm-hmm.
And they know you can't. They say you can't bring in your own food.
Right.
So now if you want anything to eat or drink,
it's going to cost you $10,000. Wait a minute.
I paid $35 for two small bottles of pop and a popcorn yesterday at the Raptor game.
Hey, I hear you.
That's the $30 an hour whore of 2026 right there.
How much do you make a year?
$250 now, I think.
Okay.
It's enough to live on.
I'm just saying, it's not a percentage of your annual income.
Yes. Right. It's not a quarter of my income.
Right.
I did not spend a quarter of my income on the... You're right. I don't know. Maybe that's something that you were confused about or misheard or something like that. I don't remember that, but I definitely remember the $200 a year and thinking, like, I think you could get more from a guy who sold you and who feels incredibly guilty about it. I think you could get more than $200 a year.
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be some interest on that. I don't know. But anyway, good movie. All right. Let's talk about some other things before we get into Rounders.
Okay.
I saw a movie that was very good the other day. It's called Dead of Winter. Have you heard of it?
I think so. Tell me what it's about.
It's got Emma Thompson in it. And she lives in a remote area in the winter. And she just wants to go fishing.
That doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. Watch it. It's amazing.
I think I've seen it though, but that she just wants to go fishing. I don't know. Dead of Winter. Okay. All right, I'll check it out.
It just came out.
Oh, then I don't think I have.
It's yeah, like well, it just came out on DVD anyway, but I it's a brand new movie.
I'll check it out.
You should watch it. It is great.
Cool.
I had another piece of news. The Beaches Cinema is closing.
Oh, yeah.
Very sad.
Yeah.
We used to go to that all the time.
Yeah.
Used to live across from it. Very sad. I haven't been there in a long time, but it's...
You're obviously to blame then.
Me or their landlord kicked them out. Either way, probably. It didn't close due to lack of business.
I find that hard to believe.
It closed because their landlord, thing that I saw said their landlord kicked them out to put in like a spa.
I don't know. I don't think landlords usually want to do that unless they're not paying the rent.
I don't know.
If they were going to sell the building to somebody, then I could see that. But to demolish it or something like that. But
I don't know. Maybe they thought they could get a lot more money for the spa.
Well, the landlord wouldn't care.
No, they thought they'd get a lot more rent out of the spa.
Okay. Sure. All right. Well, it's sad news, regardless of why.
Either way, sad news. What do you think of people bringing dogs into stores?
Sure, go for it. Usually the dogs are pretty well behaved. If you got a dog that's iffy, probably don't bring it in.
Yeah. Because I was at Walmart today. Like I told you before, I had the day off. So I had to do some grocery shopping because our groceries froze outside. We accidentally left our meal kit outside all night. We forgot to bring it in, so I had to get some vegetables. Because
your
frozen...
meal kit, what's a meal kit?
Like the HelloFresh thing.
Really, you do
yeah.
that?
Yeah, I think it's great.
Okay,
but you act like it's not a good thing. Why don't you approve?
Well, I thought you were the master chef. Like, if I've ever said anything about cooking, you're like, yeah, I already know all that. I've been cooking for my entire life, and I'm an expert at it. So why would you be getting a kit? Like, why can't you just...
So you do know that you do have to cook the food, right?
I don't
It's
know.
Not prepared.
You're talking
to cook
about
it.
The meal kit. Yeah.
Yeah.
They give you the ingredients, but
they
it's
give
like...
you the ingredients.
Why don't you just go and buy the ingredients yourself at the...
I'll tell you why, Adam. That's
okay.
a good question.
All right.
So I would to buy all of the ingredients that you would need for all the different meals that you want to have different meals every week, right? You could probably go, I don't know, 4 or 5 months not having the same meal twice. Now, we always have the same meals for some reason, but not every week, but you would have to buy so many different ingredients that you wouldn't know the exact amount that you need, and you'd have to buy like a giant jar of this spice, or you might buy the wrong thing. So I just see it as an easy way to get the ingredients that you need in the portions that you need correctly, and then they tell you how to make like a new type of food. Like I've made African dishes and lots of Asian dishes that I never would have even thought to make,
yeah,
with all these different sauces and spices and things that I would have gone to the store and been like, I don't know where this is. I don't know how to buy it. I don't know what quantity I need. So you have to do all the cooking, but it just makes everything. And then you could, after you make it once, you can make it on your own. You could keep the recipe thing and just get this much of this and this much of that and make it.
Well, you've convinced me. You made some good points.
Sold. Anyway, we left the box out. I had to get some vegetables. So I was walking out of Walmart, and this guy's coming in, and his dog just went fucking ballistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just trying to attack me. And I was like, the fuck you bring this dog into Walmart for?
Yeah.
It's obviously not super, and I was not, like, I didn't even buy meat. Like, he wasn't barking because I had steaks that he wanted to eat. Like, I bought literally all vegetables.
Right.
And maybe, like, a frozen pizza and some sour cream or something. Maybe you like sour cream. I don't know. But he was fucking going nuts.
Yeah.
And, like, the guy ran in, like, he was trying to get control of his dog, and he ran into a pole. And, like, the dog is just going crazy. And I was like, what fucking idiot brings a dog like this into Walmart?
Yeah. You got to be, like, pretty confident that your dog is, like, perfect to be able to bring them into a shop like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And this other guy was walking through Walmart with his dog, and the dog wasn't trying to grab anything off the shelves, or it wasn't peeing on things. And but this dog was fucking going nuts. Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe they're right when they say don't bring pets in there, unless they're service animals.
Right.
Or whatever. But, like, I don't see also most of the time a need to bring your dog into Walmart.
Right, right.
Like, you could leave it in the winter, especially, you could leave it in the car for a few minutes. If it's not going to freeze if you're in there for 10 minutes, or leave it at home.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Anyway, dogs.
Well, I'm confused about your, it's in the winter, so it's safe to leave your dog in the car?
Well, in the summer, it gets very hot, right?
Uh-huh.
So the dogs could die, and there's always videos of people rescuing dogs from hot cars and things. Obviously, I don't want the dog to be uncomfortable or dangerously exposed to the elements. But
in the winter, it's fine?
Well, for like 5 minutes.
No.
The dog's not going to freeze.
They do in Regina. They just freeze instantly.
Instant. No, I don't mean that. If it was really, really cold, obviously, you wouldn't leave your dog in a cold, freezing car. But anyway, if possible, don't bring your fucking dog into a Walmart for no reason.
Well, unless you're positive that it's well trained. Like, if you, I don't see why. If it attacked another dog, sometimes two dogs just hate each other.
Yeah.
And you can see, like, wow, this has never happened before. Mm-hmm. People pet this dog all the time. And then all of a sudden they just go nuts because another dog reacted to it strangely. But it sounds like you weren't doing anything.
No.
You didn't run at it and like run up to it as fast as you can so you could pet it or anything. Like, it might thought that it was being attacked.
I was doing what people normally do at Walmart, which is just shop.
Yeah.
Just walking with a cart. I'm not the one who was in the wrong.
Yeah.
It was the dog.
Right. I always think I'm like, so I always used to laugh because people were terrified of our dog that we had in Roseneath. Like, they would drive up and just knock it out of their car. And the dog always barked, just always ran out, just barked and barked and barked, but it would never do anything. You could get out of your car and just walk and it would just keep barking, but it would never attack you. But I would say, like, 95% of the people that came there were scared to a degree, some degree of, like, I'm not even getting out of my car. They get out of their car, but they're terrified to even walk towards it. Like, some degree of, like, not comfortable at all around a barking dog. And I always used to laugh because I'm like, the dog's not going to do anything. They're fine. They just bark. That's what they do. And
some of them attack.
Well, that's what my story was going. So I was walking outside of the convenience store near my place. This is like a couple of years ago, and there was this dog chained up outside, and I went down to pet it. And as I did, it just turned around and lunged at my hand, like, ow! You know, this huge bite. And I just happened to pull my hand away, and it missed my hand, like, by, you know, a centimeter, like, just trying to chomp on it. And then I just kept walking like this. No problem. But I was totally in the wrong. Like, you don't just pet a strange animal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I guess some of them do that.
Yeah.
Some of them just, if you walk up to it, they'll just try to bite you as hard as they possibly can. And I'm like, I've never encountered a dog like that. So I guess in my 40 years of living, I've just been lucky with animals.
Yeah, I've never had a dog really bite me, but like there's always whenever I walk with my kids, people are always leaving their dogs off leash and they're always like running up, especially when my kids were smaller, like a dog that was bigger than them would run up at them and try to jump on them, not in like a mean way, but in like a friendly way.
Mm-hmm.
And they were rightly fucking terrified. Like I'd be blocking them from dogs a lot of the time and the dog would jump up on me and I'd pet it and be like, all right, could you get this fucking dog away from me to the owners? And they'd be like, hey, that friendly dog. And he would have knocked over my children.
You see, I don't mind that at all.
Absolutely terrified.
When the people let their dogs off and they run up and they're all excited and they jump on me, I don't mind that at all. I like petting them and playing with them for a second. And then I just carry on with my life. That doesn't bother me, but
doesn't bother me, but I'm not a small child. Just
clearly it does. You're like, can you get this fucking dog away from me? That's what you said.
Because I'm in charge of my small children at the time who would have been knocked over and probably hurt by this dog if it jumped on them.
Mm-hmm.
A dog larger than that.
Sounds like you didn't like it, though.
I didn't like having to protect my children from dogs.
Well, that's not what you said a second ago. I gotta go. You were like, it was jumping on you, and then you were like, okay, I'll pet it, but can you get this animal away?
I'm fine with it jumping on me, but I don't
want to
protect my children.
And it's okay.
I didn't like it because I knew that it was jumping on me instead of jumping on my children.
Okay, you win again. You win again. You do love all dogs, and you love them.
I don't like dogs at all.
Let's talk about rounders. Let's talk about rounders.
One more thing before rounders.
Fucking, you just disagree with everything I say. Just no, I love them. Oh, you do love them. I don't even like them at all. I hate them. Oh, you don't like them. I like them a lot. I don't know. You're an insane person.
Yeah, that's me. One more comment, and I realized this when I was watching Dead of Winter, the movie that you're going to watch. Drones have added millions of dollars in production value.
Yeah.
To movies.
Yeah.
It's incredible how much value you get out of a drone.
Are you thinking about this because of which one? Claim?
Because of Dead of Winter. Well, the Claim too. The Claim you could have made and put drones in there instead of getting helicopter footage.
Right. They do that big scene above the town, which is so important to the movie to show the whole town, and he's burnt it to the ground. I'm assuming they built a whole town and then burned it. Right? Yeah. For that movie. And like they just didn't have enough money to buy some white makeup to paint that guy's face at the end so he looked like a corpse. They just were out of money because they're like, we built a town, we burned it down, and then we need to buy a helicopter to fly over the thing. Yeah. Today you can do that with just the drone and some CGI. The CGI would still be expensive, but the drones are free.
Yeah, essentially free. And they add so much money. Like Dead of Winter was probably made for very little money. It's a small film. But with the drone footage gives it what used to be millions of dollars in production value.
Yeah. I agree with you. So
shout out to drones.
All right.
Now rounders.
Okay. I love rounders. And when I watched it again, I'm like, oh, this is such a great movie. And I was thinking, I can quote a lot of this movie. Mm-hmm. A lot of the lines. I was like, geez, I remember that line. I remember that line. And I think I must have seen this movie dozens of times when I was young. Yes. But then I was thinking, I wonder when the last time I saw it was. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't have told you. Did I see it 5 years ago, 10 years ago? But I've decided I probably has not been 20 years since I saw this movie. And here's the clue. I remembered when he's playing against some pretentious people. Mm-hmm. And they're saying weird stuff. And they're saying stuff. And then his response is something like, well, I have what's known as the wheel. It has earthy tones and enough high and low kick, whatever. He responds, and then Worm kind of sneers and goes, yeah, you nailed those pretentious dicks. But I never knew what those pretentious people were talking about. And then this time watching it, they're all smoking cigars. And the first thing the girl says is, oh, I love the Robusto. So this time I watched and I'm like, oh, they're talking about their cigars. And then the other guy says, I like the Cameroon wrapper on this thing. It's nice and oily. And it's a weird, they're weird things to be saying.
Yeah.
But I realized the last time I saw this movie, I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. This time I watched, I'm like, well, clearly they're talking about the cigars because I know what a Robusto is.
You weren't educated in cigars at that point.
So it's probably been landmark. 20 years, probably been more than 20 years since I've seen this movie.
I can't believe you went 20 years without seeing Rounders.
Yeah, and I would have kept going except for you made me watch it. I don't know why. It's just I think I burned out on it, watching it so many times in the first 8 years of its existence.
Yeah. I would say I probably watched this movie less times than you, but I probably watch it every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. I don't know.
Just mainly to see, like, is it possible I could still love this movie this much? And is it also possible that I will want to watch this movie again after seeing it for the 10th, 11th, 12th, 15th time?
Mm-hmm.
Will I be like, I got to take a break? But every time I want to, I think of this movie, I'm like, I want to see that again.
Yeah.
Like, there's not that many movies where you can say, I'll just watch this movie whenever.
Yeah.
Especially you and me, we watch a lot of movies. It's not like we watch the same, our favorite 5 movies or 10 movies again, like, and again and again, like a lot of people, because those are the movies that we like and those are movies that we've seen and those are the movies that we feel comfortable with. We don't want to watch, people don't want to watch foreign movies or whatever they are, or complicated movies or movies like The Claim. I don't think a lot of people are out there watching The Claim.
Right.
But Rounders, you can just watch that movie anytime. You know exactly what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know he's going to lose, and then Worm comes in and complicates everything, and then he wins at the end, and then he goes to Vegas, and you're wondering what's going to happen, but you want to watch it every single time.
Okay, this leads me into my thought. This is a movie that I think should have a sequel. I think it would be so cool to have a Rounders 2.
Okay.
I think you could do a sequel to this movie so cool. And
what's your pitch?
Well, I wanted you to come up with a pitch as well, or what at least have some good ideas of what to do and what not to do in a sequel to this movie. Like,
okay,
they've talked about it. I guess I saw an interview from like 10 years ago where Matt Damon said, we've talked about it, they had some ideas and blah blah blah. And then even 2 years ago there was talk about it, and I don't know exactly what the talk was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, yeah, this could be cool. And I think I did see somebody throw out there like this could be a cool Color of Money type of sequel.
Yeah.
Where you bring back the main character and he's had a life of gambling and you did see him 30 years prior.
Yeah.
As a professional, or getting a start to his professional gambling career. But I had a few thoughts of what should be in the sequel. Okay. Do you bring back all the characters? I think so. Yeah. Bring back Worm.
You think Worm has lived 30 years?
Yes. In my version of the sequel, he has.
Okay.
Yeah. And bring back, of course, Matt Damon and his girlfriend, take her, leave her.
Gretchen Moll. You got to have Gretchen Moll in your movie.
But she's horrible in the movie. She's so annoying. You're so happy when he ditches her. So I don't think you need her for the sequel.
She's learned a lot since then. She's been on Boardwalk Empire. She's had sex with her own son. you gotta bring her back. And you gotta bring back her and Famke Janssen.
Sure. They're not necessary. It's more about, do you bring back Worm or not?
Okay.
Because you could definitely do a whole new cast, but just have the one character that's constant is Matt Damon. He's had a life. What happened to him? Did he go on to go bust again? Is he a successful gambler? Did he win the World Series of Poker 5 times? What's happened to his life in the last 30 years? Do you bother to bring back Worm? Because what are they going to do if they bring back Worm? He's going to come back into his life and he's going to go, I haven't seen you in 30 years.
Yeah.
And then he's going to say, I'm in some trouble. And then Matt Damon's going to say, look, man, I'll bail you out again, but you got to trust, do what I say this time. And then Worm's going to go, yeah, of course I will. Of course I will. That's what they would do. In sequel writing 101 in Hollywood, that's what they would tell you to do. Bring back Worm, do the exact same storyline again, but 30 years later.
Remake it, essentially,
Remake it. Everything that you liked about the first one, do it again in the second one. Here's why, don't do that. Don't bring back Worm and make it a cliche. He gets him into trouble again. Because that's like, that is exactly what they'd want you to do. Bring back Worm, but have him, he's actually changed as a human being.
Okay.
And then I thought, have I ever seen a sequel where the character changed? I don't think I ever have. I don't think they've ever brought back a character who was that one-dimensional for a sequel and been like, he's a completely different person. He's lived a life. Now you want to know more about this character.
Yeah.
They don't do that. They just bring back characters and go, well, he'll be exactly the same. And then Matt Damon will have to rescue him again. And then it'll be, he'll bring in more mafia guys. It'll do the same fucking movie in the sequel.
Yeah.
Bring back Worm, but give him a fucking second dimension.
Yeah.
That's my one thing. I haven't written the movie yet. But that's what I would want to see.
I think you should. The character I think that I would bring back before I thought of any of the other characters would be John Turturro's character.
He'd be a cool character, sure.
Because he could still be the conscience, the voice of reason. He's probably now, I don't know, 70 years old, I guess. It's crazy to think that Matt Damon made this movie 30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And he's, what, in his mid-50s now? I think he was, or his late 50s? And he was in his mid to late 20s then. So it's almost, like you said, like The Color of Money is a pretty good comparison. A guy who went from his 20s to his 50s or his 60s by the time this movie would get made. So he would be kind of the old guy in it, and you would have John Turturro. He would be the older, but close to retirement or death sort of mentor.
Maybe John Turturro is the character that gets Matt Damon back into trouble. Make that the twist. It's like in the first movie, he was totally the conscious and the conscience, and he was totally the voice of reason, and Worm was the piece of shit. Start the movie off where Worm comes back into his life, but you, and yet everyone's thinking like Worm's going to get him into trouble. And he even does things that you're like, oh, clearly they're going down the path where Worm gets him back into trouble.
Yeah.
But then have him twist ending, twist climax, have the halfway point where Worm isn't a piece of shit. He does something where you're like, clearly he's going to betray him, but he doesn't. And he's a stand-up guy. And then you're like, holy shit, never saw that coming. It's the easiest twist ever. But I don't think they ever do that in sequels. They always just bring back the same characters and have them be the same roles.
Yeah, essentially. So, and then they add another character in, something like that, to make it interesting.
Yeah. So, okay. John Turturro, bring him back. Teddy KGB, I think, I don't know. It'd be too much of the exact same movie if you brought him back as well. He's awesome in this movie, but we're done with him. We've seen enough of him.
Or just for like almost a cameo. Like he doesn't factor into the plot.
Okay. He can be a cameo, but here's what I'm going to say about cameos.
Okay.
No fucking cameos.
Ooh.
No poker player cameos. You had Johnny Chan in the first one. The second one, all these poker players would be like, that was the movie that made poker as popular as it is today. It's 100% the reason that poker became popular around us.
It's incredible. Yeah.
I don't know of any movie that brought a sport to the forefront like that and then sustained its popularity for the next 30 years. It's single-handedly the movie that made poker cool.
Yeah.
And every poker player would want to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't let them. You just got to say, sorry, maybe we'll pick one of you guys. But all you poker players that are lined up that want to be in our movie, they just want to be background actors. We're not letting it because They just made not Billy Madison, fucking Happy Gilmore. They just made Happy Gilmore.
Oh, with the golfers.
Every fucking golfer in the world. It's the same thing. Happy Gilmore made golf kind of popular to a new generation or a younger generation of people that didn't care about golf.
Yeah.
So then they make the sequel 30 years later. And every golfer was like, yeah, I want to be in this. I'm in on the joke. And it was the worst movie ever made. So don't do that.
Yeah, that's what I think. You're right. And I think that the opposite of that are the later Rocky movies, where they don't bring in Mike Tyson or Lennox Lewis or somebody like that for him to fight. They bring in professional boxers because they're good at boxing, but they're not playing themselves and they're not the most famous guys. And I think that's the same kind of thing that they should do here, is bring in, I don't know, maybe professional poker players that you don't know, not like Daniel Negreanu and I don't know who else is famous. The Asian lady who seems to be very good at poker. I forget her name, but she's very famous. Yeah. I think she's a friend or a whatever you call it, of Daniel Negreanu. What do you call that when you're like when you mentor somebody, whatever it is, forget it. Anyway, I only know two poker players.
Yeah, Phil Hellmuth would be another one,
which they mentioned Phil Hellmuth in the movie, and I was like, I didn't know he was famous in the 90s.
I like when they throw out the names of people in this first one, but I don't want them showing up in the sequel if you're going to make a sequel movie.
Right.
So these are some do's and don'ts from me.
Yeah.
Don't bring them in. They'll want to be in the movie.
Yeah.
And people that made Happy Gilmore 2 would want to put them in there because they'd be like, well, that's going to draw audiences to it, and don't do it. Okay. That's just my opinion.
Now, because Matt Damon's a gambler, do you think it would work if he had switched to a different game?
What would work?
The movie. So that you got your sequel and you say, you know what? Poker has been done. Rounders did everything that you could do with poker.
All right, maybe if you bring him back and he's on to a different game because he busted again at Texas Hold'em.
Yeah.
And so now he's gambling. He's still a gambler, but he's gambling different games or something like that.
Yeah.
And then somebody's got to draw him back into Texas Hold'em, and he's got to play one more Texas Hold'em game to save his life. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Or maybe it's not even Texas Hold'em. Maybe he's given up Texas Hold'em, and there's a new a kid who's coming up doing some other game, Baccarat or whatever it is. And now he's got to give his, not necessarily Texas Hold'em, but his philosophies and his gambling skills and his angles and how to read people to that guy.
Okay.
Or girl. Whatever it is, but it could be a whole different up and coming thing.
Okay. No bad ideas here.
No, I think the only bad idea is bringing back Martin Landau.
Martin Landau. Yeah. Yeah.
That would be a terrible idea.
Is he dead?
He's dead.
Okay. That's the joke. All right. I would need to know that.
Right. But you could bring back Grandma.
Grandma?
It would be terrible, but you could. There's a lot of Sopranos actors in here. They would all be recognizable actors to anybody who's watched Sopranos.
Yeah.
I like your idea that there would be a sequel. I never even thought of this movie.
I think it's a perfect sequel movie because Worm is still alive. The last time you see him, he's like, I'm going on the run.
Mm-hmm.
So you could definitely have him come back, and he hasn't seen him. So you're like, oh, that's where the movie picks up. It picks up because Worm left the first one. You haven't seen him in 30 years. He comes back, and then you can find out what Matt Damon's, that they would make a mistake where they just kind of like be like, he's been fine. The last 30 years haven't mattered. That's what they always do in movies, because they're like, it's too much. We don't want to have to talk about he had some wins, he had some losses. He had some wins, he had some losses. They don't want to talk about all that. They're like, let's just pretend 30 years didn't happen and then start the movie up. That'd be kind of a mistake, but whatever. There's a way, a bunch of ways you can go with it. And I, all I'm saying is don't do cameos and don't have Worm be the entire thing again, where he again gets him into trouble. Do it.
For sure.
Give us something to surprise us a little bit. That's all I'm asking for.
Now, is Matt Damon, would it work if Matt Damon was married to either Gretchen Mol's character or Famke Janssen's character?
Would it work?
I want to put one or both of them back in the movie. Okay. I think Famke Janssen.
Sure.
Maybe she's his ex-wife by now.
Okay.
Sure. But I think they would have bonded by Gretchen Mol leaves him. Maybe Famke Janssen goes to Vegas with him shortly after the events of the first movie. Who knows?
Sure. That could work.
Who knows? But it's a good idea. I'd never even... Brounders is so perfect to me that I'd never even considered a sequel.
Okay, well, don't do it unless you've got a really good idea to do it. That'd be my advice.
That's probably why they haven't made it yet. They haven't found the best idea.
Maybe. Let's hope they care that much about it. Okay. Yeah. Something else. Anything else? Anything?
I don't know. Anything you want to talk about? Anything you saw this week? Have you watched The Pit yet?
No.
It's fantastic. You got to watch it.
I don't want to.
You have to.
I don't want to. I'm not going to.
But you have to.
I just heard of a TV show. Have you heard of the TV show Smoke?
Yes.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's about like a fire investigator or something.
Yeah, okay. I'd never heard of it. And it was on a podcast I was listening to. It was one of their top 20 TV shows of 2025. I'm like, I can't believe that I've never even heard of this movie, TV show. And it had a whole season. I'm like, that's crazy. They released a TV show that gets by me.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but I have not watched it at all.
That's okay. I'm just surprised that I never heard of it. I thought maybe there's a chance you hadn't heard of it.
No, I'm chance. Always like, I'd never heard of the show Industry, and it's on the fourth season.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's so much stuff now.
Let's talk more about Rounders. We haven't even talked about Rounders. Come on. Come on. I when I said anything else, is anything else from this movie? All we said
anything else
Rounders, and then I said, make a sequel. What should we do? And then that was it. Come on.
I think it does a good job, and you and I like processes. It does a good job of showing you poker in the movie.
I love it. That's I had written that down somewhere, but I've forgotten it. But yes, I think they explain it concisely enough at the beginning that you know how to play it enough that you can watch the rest of this movie. Maybe you're stumbling over who has the best hand at some points when they flash to the three cards that are on the table.
Yeah.
But it's you don't care, really. You still can love the movie, and then you can watch it again and again and again and realize, they were doing stuff there that they weren't beating you over the fucking head with, like every other poker movie, like Maverick, when they're like, the straight flush gets beaten by the royal flush, beats the four of a kind. Yeah. Like, they don't do that. At the end, in the big climax of the final scene, he flopped the nut straight. And when you watch this movie, if you don't know exactly how poker works, you probably would miss that and be like, I don't know who's winning right now.
Yeah. And like, the cards aren't like huge cards on the board. You're not like, wow, there's got to be four of these and whatever it is. Right. Like, like you said, it's not a royal flush.
Right.
It's just,
so you don't really know who has the best hand at that point. You're just going by the characters and their reactions to stuff.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great, that's why this movie wins.
Incredibly smart.
I think it's very smart. And they also, they go on to use all the lingo, all the poker lingo, nuts, stuff like that. They don't stop every time they use some new term and be like, oh, by the way, this means this. They don't do that. They just give you enough info that you can enjoy the rest of the movie.
Yeah, because you're watching what the players do. You're not watching the cards. And you're not worried about who's chasing an ace and who's doing this. You're worried about like which one of these guys is getting over psychologically on the other one.
Mm-hmm.
The cards don't matter, as Matt Damon says.
The one thing I was always confused about is what's Teddy's tell? And then why does he give it? Why does he tell him what his tell is?
Mm-hmm.
Like they stop for a second and explain what a tell is.
Yes.
They do that really quickly. And then, mm-hmm. so then the one thing you're watching for is like at the end, when Teddy goes to eat his Oreo, he snaps the Oreo open. I remember asking other people that had seen this movie, like, what is the tell? I just still don't get it. Do you get it?
I was once told by Clinton Butter,
mm-hmm.
and this is the worst thing ever, is that his tell is whether or not he eats the Oreo. And I was like, that's the stupidest thing ever.
But I think, like, that's what it is. What do you think
that's
it is?
What it is, too.
Yeah.
It's got something to do with the fucking Oreo. And the first time Clinton said it, I was like, that's the stupidest fucking tell ever. Like, would the guy not know that? And then, like, you watch and you're like, it's got something to do with the fucking Oreo.
I used to think it's got to be more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it had something to do with when he broke it apart in slow motion. If all of the cream went to one side of the Oreo or something, I'm like, his hands weren't steady or something. But then I'm like, this time I'm like, I think it is that simple. That basically, when he's bluffing earlier in the movie, he's bluffing, he breaks the Oreo apart, and then he doesn't eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or maybe that's the point that he lays it down. I'm not sure.
No, I think he does eat it when he's bluffing or something like that.
He eats it when he wins the hand
mm-hmm.
because he had the cards or something. Yeah, fucking even now I'm confused about it again. But I really do think it is that simple. And so why is Clinton's the dumbest thing ever? You just didn't agree with him.
Well, because, I couldn't imagine that's what his tell was.
Right.
And then I went and I watched the movie and I'm like, I think he might be right.
This time,
he may not have
I'm
been
sure
exactly right, but of what he said, but I realized, like, I think he basically got it right. That has something to do with the Oreo.
Yeah. Well, it definitely has to do with the Oreo. He throws the Oreos away when Matt Damon tells him, and then Matt Damon says, I would have let him go on chewing those Oreos all night until he was broke, but I don't have time for that.
Yes.
So that's at this point, yes, I think the tell is that he eats the Oreo when he had the whatever, the best hand or something.
Yeah.
Well, fuck. It is simple. But then I don't understand why Matt Damon tells him what his tell is to speed things up, other than just to put him on tilt, I guess. Just to rattle him, get him on edge, make him lose confidence in himself.
It seems like it.
Okay.
It seems like it. There's still mysteries that we haven't gotten to the bottom of in this movie.
Which I like, that they don't exactly explain everything to you. But the Oreo thing seems so simple that it's like, could that really? They threw in the tell is that he eats it when he has the hand and he doesn't eat it when he's bluffing. Like, I don't know. Could it be that? I think it is that simple. And we're still not sure because we're morons.
Yeah, it may have. They may have just had to do that to give you something to that you could tell in the movie.
Let's go back to what you were saying about HelloFresh or that meal kit thing that you do.
Yes.
Because you might have thought I was being sarcastic, but I was being serious where you said that you make different recipes and then once you've made them, then you can make them again if you want to. And I agree with you 100% because that's what I hate about, or I've hated about cooking my whole life, is that when I tried to learn it from my mother, she was always like, well, you just put in whatever you feel like. If you got some of this vegetable, throw in some of those vegetables. You put in some of those spices, whatever you feel like. Just make it however you want. And I'm like, I don't know how I want it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I need the exact recipe to follow to make it taste like somebody else intended it to taste like.
Yeah.
Let me do that. And then let me do it another three times. And then maybe I'll get the confidence to tweak some of the spices or whatever. So
yeah,
I've just learned how to start making dough myself. And it's because I got a a giant thing of flour that they gave me by mistake from Walmart.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's been sitting there for a year where I've had this huge thing of flour that I'm like, I gotta put it to use, but I don't really know what to do with it. And it's as simple as adding water to it. And even when I watch recipes online, they're like, here's how you make your dough. You take a certain percentage of double zero flour and you mix it with a certain percentage of this flour because this will make it blah, blah, blah. And they go on. And they're like, Nira, here's how we make it. We take two eggs and we put the eggs in the middle. Then we add a percentage of water based on the hydration of the flour. And then you do this and now you mix it, but don't mix it too long. Mix it just the right amount of time. Now stop mixing. Now take it out. Now knead it. You got to knead it for the next 30 minutes of your life. You got to knead this fucking they go on. And I'm like, seems like way too complicated. Forget it.
Yeah.
So finally, I just was like, okay, it seems like some people say just add water to flour and you get dough. I'm like, I'll try it. I haven't tried it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But I finally just put in a little bit of flour and then I mixed a little bit of water. And it makes a dough ball that you can then slice up into noodles. And so I made some fresh pasta myself. And like, it's really easy to do. It's so super easy, but it's satisfying to make it all yourself.
It is. Yeah.
So I guess my point is I'm with you because then I went and made one recipe and I followed it. And now I'm like, okay, but it was pretty good. Maybe I'll tweak it a little bit next time for myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wasn't being sarcastic. I get why you want these kits. And then maybe next time you'll be like, oh, I could throw in some of my extra bell peppers into that thing that I have left over. And now you're becoming like a real chef. Like the real chefs will just have a whole bunch of ingredients and they'll be like, what could I make with this? And they'll figure it all out in their mind and then they'll just make it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what my mother does. She just makes it however she feels like it. But then she sucked at teaching. She couldn't teach. She's just like, well, just put whatever you feel like in there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know how to do that because I don't know what I feel like until I've got the experience of a lifetime of cooking shit. She just didn't get that. She's supposed to be a teacher.
Yeah. And in my house, it was always like the same ingredients too. Like there was never any kind of spices from this country and noodles from that country. It was always the same, you know, you could move the things around, but it was always the same stuff. Like I'd never even heard of bok choy until I was probably in my early 20s and somebody was making like a Filipino dish. And I was like, what is that? And in this dish, and she was like, oh, it's bok choy. And I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
Never even heard of this.
Yeah. Yeah. My mother was guilty of that too. She would be like, she just wouldn't buy it. Just never, ever. She'd be like, no, you don't put bok choy in anything. And it's just another vegetable that you could throw in something and, and change it up and make it new and exciting. And that's helps me a lot with sticking to a diet is trying something new and I might butcher it.
Yeah.
And usually it's still pretty tasty. If you follow like flour and water, it's always going to be tasty. Flour and water is always, you can't butcher that. It might not be perfect dough, but it's always going to taste good. Like any pizza that I make is always going to taste good.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with a pizza. Yeah, it's cooking is very interesting. And there's so many things that you can do, and that's why I get the kits that I can just be like, I want to try this new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can try it, and then sometimes it'll be like, I don't like it, or I really like it, or I like part of it.
Yeah.
And I want to do something a little differently next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's I don't know, it's good, love it.
Okay,
we've been using them for I don't know 5 or 6 years at least.
Yeah, there's something to that for sure. Because I do the same thing, but I don't do it with a kit. I do it by following an exact recipe. And if they say use a quarter teaspoon of a certain spice, I'll have to go out and get a big giant bag of that spice, and it's still sitting in my cupboard.
Yeah,
it's 3 years there. Later, because I used it for one recipe. But the point was that I made it exactly how it was supposed to be made, and then I decide if I like it, and then the next time if I make it again, I'll probably make it the next three times exactly how I was supposed to make it, and then I'll get the confidence to be like, I'm gonna change it up. I'm gonna do a half a teaspoon of that spice instead of a quarter because I like it. That's about as adventurous as I get.
It's cooking. Good. Cooking also relaxes me for some reason. I don't know why. It's just the following of the thing that I'm not making the decision. The decision is made for me. I'm just following the orders of the recipe.
Yeah. I don't know if I would call it relaxing for me, but there's definitely, I get more enjoyment out of the meal after I've made it, and it might take me an hour to make the meal. But I get more enjoyment out of that. And I used to think the exact opposite. Like, for me, the key to eating right and losing weight is to have the meal prepared for me and then stuff put in front of my face, and then I stuff it into my face, and then I stop thinking about food forever.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. If I order a pizza from Pizza Hut, I'll eat the entire pizza, then I'll want another three pizzas.
Yeah.
But if I make myself a pizza and control every aspect of it, for some reason, I finish that one pizza and it was way more enjoyable. And I don't want another three of them. Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Very interesting. All right. Pick some movies. Okay. How about Black Mass and Tyrannosaur?
Okay. What's Tyrannosaur? What's that about?
It has nothing to do with dinosaurs.
All right. Sounds like a B, D level.
It's not
Jurassic Park ripoff.
It's nothing like what you think it would be. It's not science fiction. It's not dinosaurs.
What year did it come out of?
Well,
forget it. Don't worry about it. I'll figure it out.
Hold on. Came out. Paddy Considine, the actor, directed it. It came out, I'm going to say, like 10, 15 years ago. It stars Peter Mullen. There you go. From The Plane.
And Black Mass with Johnny Depp.
Jonathan Depp.